Since you mentioned it, Kirk, let's retrace our steps and go one passage back to Zechariah 14:4. It says, "Then Yahweh will come forth to oppose, to attack." This is Lacham, to show hostility to fight against the Goyim, Gentiles, foreign nations, and people from different races and places. Engaging in battle that day, himself in their midst. Now, in their midst, he's talking about in the midst of Jerusalem, in the midst of his people, because he said that these Gentiles, very Gentiles, use the Goyim in 14:2. He says the Goyim, the people from different races and places, the non-Jews, the non-Israelites, are going to attack Israel. They're going to seize the city. Their homes are going to be plundered. Women are going to be raped. Do you know a religion that has a propensity to plunder people's homes, that are doing it today by the tens of thousands, that are plundering the people's homes and raping the women? Is there a religion today that's engaged in that behavior?
Islam.
You betcha. All over Iraq and Saudi Arabia and all over, excuse me, not Iraq, Saudi Arabia. Well, Saudi Arabia is just disgusting in its own right, but all over Iraq, Syria, and Nigeria, right?
Right.
All over Libya.
You name it.
Yeah, all over Yemen. In fact, it's happening all over Pakistan, too. It's happening also in Afghanistan.
Can I make a comment about the what that was reported just a minute ago?
Sure.
Obama said he has reneged on withdrawing from Afghanistan. He's going to leave 5,500 people there.
Right.
And he said he's going to do it because the government of the pedophiles that we installed would collapse if we don't. I've added, obviously, a certain part of that.
Yeah.
They're going to
collapse if we don't.
They're scared that that government will fall apart.
Now, that government, by the way, like the government we propped up in Vietnam.
Yeah.
The government we propped up in Vietnam was the most economically corrupt, morally corrupt government in the world at the time that we propped it up. It was our government, and it was a reflection of our values, and it was nothing but a den of thieves. It did not have any respect of the people because they were con men and thieves. And the government in Afghanistan is by a hundredfold worse. Not just in thievery of money and skimming monies that were supplied for the reconstruction of that country, that, of course, we broke. But in terms of the senior officers in the police, military, and government performing what they call bachiba, play.
That's why I said it that way, in light of the New York Times story where the soldiers said, you know, my God, they told us no.
No, we can't even hold them accountable. They're doing it on our bases. They're doing it with using our weapons and our power and influence. And when we give them authority over a town, they take the cutest boys, chain them to beds, and gang rape them for weeks on end. And then they torture them, threatening them never to speak of this. And when we say you can't do that because, you know, we propped you up, we're drummed out of the service. We're disgraced.
Who are these people?
And so we're going to maintain an American fighting force in Afghanistan because without it, this government of sodomizers and pedophiles won't stand. But with them, oh, perfect. We can continue to abuse the people. Do you know that it was only recently, you know, after 10 years of American assault on Afghanistan, that Afghanistan became the second largest source of refugees into Europe. Well, we're doing a wonderful job there, aren't we?
Yeah, good. Yeah.
God, we are just repulsive.
Before you go back to Zechariah, I wanted to ask you a question. This morning I was looking up... Well, first of all, I was thinking about Christianity and Yahweh's name, because we just talked about that. Well, y'all talked about it yesterday, and how important, obviously, he makes his name, but through the eyes of Zechariah.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up the most popular Christian dictionary, mm-hmm. Concordance, and Strong's.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Strong's, it's mm-hmm. got Yahweh, Yahweh. Right. I mean, yeah,
they have Yahweh.
Hey, Y-H, you know, Y-H-W-H.
Right.
Then it proceeds to go pronounce it incorrectly because of the point system, Yeho, V, or something.
They actually provide, I have the pronunciation, right? I don't look at Strong's for anything other than
number.
I like Strong's for roots. I think it's pretty decent for roots. Although you know, once you find out what the process is, you can find the root of any word without Strong's. It's the since most nouns in Hebrew have a verbal root, the action of the verb defines the nature of the noun.
Right.
But they actually have Jehovah as one of the.
It goes from Yehovah, then it says or Yehovah.
Oh, God.
And it has Jehovah.
Oh, God.
I know.
Ouch.
Yeah, and so you have to go.
Wow.
What's
God, that's painful.
This?
I mean, you think there's any chance the Strongs didn't know there's no J in Hebrew?
Of course they knew it's not J.
Did he know? Do you think there's any chance that Strongs wasn't aware that there's no B in Hebrew?
Well, of course not. I mean, that's the whole point. Cause now, I use the Westminster Leningradish Codex.
Uh-huh.
If you just use the consonants, you
mm-hmm.
know, get rid of the vowel points, you'd be surprised how much information. I mean, that's the first century or 1008 CE
mm-hmm.
is when they said that came along.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's readily available, so you can check things back and forth on that as well. And that is incredible as far as they don't hide anything there either.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a Hebrew word, a popular Hebrew word called the givim?
Givim?
Ever heard of a givim?
Mm.
Well, probably not, because it's goyim. And you know why it's goyim? Because it's G-W-Y-M, and the W is pronounced O. That's why it's goyim. It ain't givim.
No.
It's not a tivra.
Yeah.
You ever heard of a tivra?
No.
But it would be tivra if Jehovah is correct. It would be a tivra. Well, it's Torah because the wa in Hebrew produces the O sound.
Well, you know, William and I had a little discussion about Havia instead of Haya, where they put the V, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and I don't know where the V actually started coming from, unless it's a holdover from so many.
Oh no,
Judaism being in Germany or
Yiddish. What happened is, what happened is that the V sound exists in a number of Goyim dialects, and so. In Hebrew, they wanted to be able to have a V sound, and they began to create their V sound out of two letters. They would turn the beth, the B, into a V, and there were certain words that they turned the wa into a V.
Yeah.
But you can't find a single Hebrew word where it is appropriate to pronounce either letter as a V.
And slang is one thing, but if you're going to translate the Tanakh,
right.
He says, don't change a letter, change the
right. The testimony of God, where Yosha himself said not a single letter, the smallest letter, and by the way, that was the Yod, and the first letter in Yahweh's name and in Yosha's name, nor any stroke that comprises a Hebrew letter, not one shall be annulled or changed, so long as the heavens and earth exist. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Why are you changing them?
So
there's no V. There's no J. You know, why would you do that? And when, and particularly Strong's, you know, you're selling something that you're professing that will help you understand the Hebrew, and you're writing something that you know is not true. You know, there's no J. You know, there's no V. Why would you do it? Yeah, we did lose Kirk. He'll call back in. But it is astonishing. And, you know, here we're talking about Goyim. Everybody knows Goyim. the Hebrew term. It means non-Jewish, non-Yehudim, non-Israelite. And the wah is the produces the O sound. It's just like shalom. The wah pronounces the produces the O sound. It's like Elohim from Eloah. The wah pronounces the O sound, provides it. So throughout all of this, it is, you just have to be either wholly and completely ignorant, which most religious people cannot claim. Strongs can't claim it. Pastors can't claim it. You have to be either wholly and completely ignorant, and if you're claiming to be an expert, if you're writing things, publishing books, and you can't claim as a defense to be, well, I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Or you have to be deliberately deceiving. And why would you produce a book designed to help people understand the Word of God and deliberately and knowingly deceive, particularly on something as important as His name?
Well, I mean, he just told you. I mean, Zechariah, you know, as he does in many, many, many places, you know, they're going to respond to his name. They're going to call out his name. That's the key word, if you want to.
Yeah, you know, all Christians are looking forward to his return. And here on his return, he says, I'm returning in opposition to you, Goyim, your church. And the people that I'm returning to, they're going to say, Yahweh is our God.
Mm-hmm.
They're not saying Jesus is our God. They're not saying Christ is our God. They're not saying the Lord is our God. They're saying Yahweh is our God. And yet every one of these Christian publications knowingly and deliberately changed what is written there to say, they will say the Lord is our God. Wow, can you imagine? They knowingly and deliberately remove the essence of God's communication. It's just despicable.
But it's not even hard to see that they've done it.
No. No, and here God's going to hold them accountable. He says, you know, I'm in opposition to you. I'm hostile to you. And I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm going to ask why you injured these people. And I'm going to declare that you made merchandise out of men. There's going to be a consequence for that. You're not going to like the consequence. Not going to like it at all. I despise the government of the United States of America. I despise it. And I despise it for reasons like this. Israel bristled today at the U.S. statement that it may have used excessive force to confront, I'm going to use the mythical name, Palestinian stabbings. And also published hospital images. It said refuted Palestinian president, and he's no president, he wasn't elected, Mahmoud Abbas's allegation a teen suspect had been executed. Muslims lie. That's what Muslims do. Muslims kill. That's what Muslims do. Defense Minister Moshe Yishlon accused Washington of misreading the Israeli mythical people known as the Palestinian conflict, saying that shooting knife-wielding Palestinians is self-defense. Boy, I want to tell you, everyone in the world should see those videos of that moronic Muslim driving his car into a bus stop filled with men, women, and children, all of whom were defenseless, then jumping out of the car screaming, Allahu Akbar, as he stabbed the victims that he himself had bludgeoned on the sidewalk with a knife. And then to see the Israeli try to talk him into just stopping. And then the knife-wielding Muslim lunged at the Israeli. And he was shot, but not killed. And then when he said, just stop, he continued to try to kill those victims that he had injured. And brings up his knife again to hack at the man trying to get him to stop. And it's only then that he shoots him again, and even then he doesn't kill him. And the Muslim tries to get up again to slash his knife and to kill. And for the United States to say that we used excessive force to side with the perpetrators of terror, let me tell you what excessive force is. To invade Afghanistan on a pile of lies. To invade Iraq and to break that country as well. To bomb Libya back into the Stone Age. To run your drones and kill in Yemen to the point now that it's involved in a civil war. To bomb the Syria into oblivion so that there are 10 million refugees. That's excessive force. Defending yourself against somebody that would drive a car into a bus stop and then wield a knife at the victims? Oh my God, what in the world is wrong with the United States of America? Any wonder that God said woe to you?
Well, I don't understand if a gang of whomever in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
Orange County, places I spent 30-some
mm-hmm.
years of my life,
mm-hmm.
were to begin to act like even a drive-by shooting creates a task force that just about cleans out the gangs.
Oh.
And they think nothing of it, man. They just move in.
You know, you lash out at a cop in America, and you'll have the SWAT team.
Yeah.
You want to talk about excessive force?
I think Israel, every time that we have a cop or somebody here that goes above and beyond, maybe Israel should tell us that we probably handled that too excessively. You know, the Tamir Rice?
Yeah.
Israel should probably be telling us we handled that a little bit.
Well, we certainly did. You look at the Boston bombings and sending in, shutting the whole city down and sending in all manner of military and federal personnel. Yeah, that was excessive force.
So Israel doesn't say anything to us about that. So where do we even think that we have the right to say anything to them about
that? Look at the world that we have blown up. Libya, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, Egypt. Look what we have done to those countries with our excessive force. And we're telling, millions of people are dead. Tens of millions of refugees because of our excessive force. And we're telling Israel that when Muslims are wielding cars and knives to kill their people, they can't defend themselves? Is there any, under those circumstances, there would be absolutely no appropriate use of force? Can't even defend yourself.
Outside of Australia, I'm not sure it's a continent we haven't tried to wipe out at some point. I mean,
oh, good grief.
We are
just repulsive. And, of course, Secretary of State John Lurch, Kerry, is traveling to the Middle East to try to calm the violence. We're the perpetrator of the violence. We are have the largest military in the world. We use our military more than any other country in the world. There is no country that defines gunboat diplomacy better than the United States. We're trying to pick a war with China, with Russia, and with Islam simultaneously. And we're the peacemongers? Yeah, right. Kirk, when the Egyptian army, after having agreed finally to let Yahweh's chosen people, the Israelites, go, after having enslaved them for 400 years,
mm-hmm.
And then reneging on that and chasing them with their war chariots. This was at a time that the Israelis were completely unarmed,
mm-hmm.
defenseless civilians, former slaves.
They had pots and pans.
Yeah, and so they're now chasing them with their army in an attempt to kill every last one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And had parted the Red Sea, which was the Gulf of Aqaba, from Nuweiba Beach, so that the Israelites could cross. And here now are the Egyptian military trying to slaughter them on that beach. And so just as the Israelis cross his children, he says, I don't see any purpose of holding the waters back anymore. And he let go, and they all drowned in pursuit of his people.
Mm-hmm.
Did he use excessive force?
No, you just let Mother Nature do what Mother Nature does.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, by the way, in the flood. Yahweh provided instructions that Noah and his family could pay attention to and follow and engage upon that saved them. But did Yahweh actually kill anybody during the flood?
No, they drowned by their own accord. Now, it's my understanding Noah didn't make it a secret what they were doing.
No, no, of course not.
I mean, it's not like they couldn't have joined in. No,
no.
Or the Mario.
That asteroid that hit, that welled up the seawater, that caused the flood, that was on a collision course with the Earth from time immemorial.
Oh, yeah.
So Yahweh, by saying, you know, there's no reason for me to intervene and stop this thing. I protected those who were willing to listen to me, provided a means of protection. I would have protected anybody willing to listen to me.
Yeah.
By him not engaging, did he use excessive force to wipe out the rest of humanity?
No, there's no case for that.
No, there isn't. And when a people are trying, for example, here we have the last days, and this is what Zechariah is talking about, when Yahweh is going to return to oppose the Goyim, the Gentiles.
Right.
When he returns, he's going to find that one-third of his children have embraced him, have listened to what he had to say, and are reaching up and calling him by name. And they're going to say, Yahweh is our God, and Yahweh is going to respond and say, and you are my children. And in that time, he's going to return and open hostility to those who have come to Jerusalem. What are they doing in Jerusalem?
They're actually... trying to save their life.
No, but what are those who are attacking Jerusalem? He says they're doing two things in particular. They're plundering them, robbing them, and which is to destroy them and to rob them in the process. And they are raping the women.
Right.
And Yahweh is going to wipe them out.
Yeah.
And is that excessive force?
What person in their right mind would be mad at that?
Evidently the United States, but tells you that there's no one speaking for the U.S. government that's in their right mind. I mean, wow. This is back to the idea that nobody seems to be accountable. The United States is not accountable for its use of excessive force throughout the Islamic world, making a bad situation worse. Just not accountable. We're not accountable for our excessive force in our own country, where we've become a military state. We're just not accountable. And so we're now blaming others when they defend themselves, and we are so aggressive around the world. Is there any reason, any questions why Yahweh wrote Yeshayah 18, condemning, saying, whoa, alas, wake up, and you are on the wrong path, when he condemned American belligerents?
No, it's the most fair.
Yeah. You can't say you weren't warned.
Even an evil man knows that.
Wow. So here we are. Yahweh is going to come forth to oppose the Gentiles, engaging in battle that day, himself in their midst. And on that day, he will...
You know,
go ahead.
I just find it significant when I read that, because there's so few times, you know, in the Christian point of view, he finds you a parking place,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that sort of thing, but wins the football game, but he rarely engages.
Rarely.
It's a very serious matter when he says, he is going to do something, and he's talking to the first person, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And be there. This is serious stuff when he actually gets involved.
From what I can tell, this is the third time now in the course of a matter of days that he has engaged, and I think it's the first occurrence of him engaging in the better part of 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time he engaged was the fulfillment of Shavuot in 33 CE, almost 2,000 years ago. And then 2,000 years later, he first says he's pouring out a spirit of acceptance. So he is acting upon Jerusalem and his children in Jerusalem to pour out a spirit of acceptance so that he can honor the promise that he's made regarding the covenant and that he made in Yosha, that there will be a day where the divorce will end and that Yehudim will look up to him and say, you are Yahweh, you are our God, and he's going to respond and say to Yisrael, you're my children.
All right.
So he poured out the spirit of acceptance. Then he says that he sent his spiritual envoys to in opposition to the society's leaders, religious and political and military leaders, to scatter the flock.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wants genuine separation, either with him or against him. And then the Goyim, which would be the Christian church and Islam and the like,
mm-hmm.
he's going to oppose. Now, in my view here, I think his opposition, even though he uses the term battle, he wants to know, he is hostile mm-hmm. to everything that Goyim represents because of all of the religious and political and military shenanigans that we have pulled, our despicable nature. That he is making it extraordinarily clear here, I think, that while he is in opposition, this is very much like the flood.
Mm-hmm.
Except in the case of the flood, Yahweh didn't single anybody out to die, but that the asteroid caused the effects that led to the wiping out of anyone who wasn't protected by following his instructions in that ark.
Not covered by the ark.
But he says that he's coming back undiminished to the Mount of Olives, and there'll be a giant earthquake that will transpire from that moment. So what he is saying is, if you're not wiped out by his presence, which is, you know, because you haven't followed his instructions, you're not prepared to be in his presence.
You're not covered. You ain't got your space suit on.
Right, yeah. It says, you know, you ought to, on these days, come and answer my invitation and come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of my light, the set-apart spirit. You're not wearing that garment of light. You're incinerated by his return. Not his fault, your fault.
Yeah.
He's not killing you. You're dying in his presence because you can't exist in his presence with false gods and unprepared.
And he said that from day one on his tablet of stone, didn't he?
Correct. And so that's what's happening here. He views Goyim, which would be America, a very Goyim nation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 98% of America is Goyim.
Oh, yeah.
In opposition to him. And look at our rhetoric in opposition to his people.
Can we make it clear whose side we're on?
Oof.
Lord.
Yeah. By the way, in the article on the Day of Rage and why the Muslims are somehow justified in lashing out, is the infringements on their access to the Temple Mount, their mosque up there, Allah Aqsa and the Dome of the Hoofy Print, the Dome of the Rock. And it's just say, can you be a journalist that's more ill-informed than that?
Uh-huh.
Whose city is it?
Uh-huh. Jerusalem.
Yeah, it's the capital of Yisrael. Whose holy spot is that at the top of the Temple Mount? Was the temple to whom?
Mm-hmm.
To Yahweh.
Yahweh.
Absolutely. And so you want to talk about encroaching. The encroachment was when Muslims poured out as barbarians of Saudi Arabia, which was just Arabia at the time, and attacked the rest of the world. And they then, in around 700, within less than 100 years of Muhammad's death, and immediately after the War of Compulsion, built a shrine. It's in the purpose of that shrine on the Temple Mount, the Dome of the Rock, extraordinarily important in Islam, to show we conquered the dreaded Jews. We have invaded their land, and we're marking it as our own. It is Satan who is masquerading as Allah.
Sure.
Saying, yeah, instead of Yahweh's temples here, now it's a temple to me, a shrine to me. I am worshipped above the Most High. It's what I wanted to achieve.
But the Muslims didn't conquer anything. They were already taken out. They were gone.
Well, at the time there were some Yehudim there, but very few. There wasn't. It was a Byzantine colony. It was a part of Byzantinia. It was, which is, you know, Western Rome.
Yeah, Western Rome.
Western Rome under the integration between Roman Catholicism and the Western Roman Empire.
Yeah, but you know, Yeah.
That's who they defeated to go in there, and then took it from the Roman Catholic Church and from Rome is who they took it from. But that's why it's there. They, you know, it would be like, let's just say that the Ruskies really do want to invade and occupy America. And the Ruskies come in and they take over Washington, D.C. And they and every building in Washington they remake into a shrine to Russia.
Leningradus.
Yeah. Or let's just say that the Muslims.
Yeah.
Come in, you know, all these refugees, they come in, they say, you know what we're going to do is we're going to destroy Washington, and we're going to then convert all of its shrines into Islamic shrines. And they turn every building in Washington into a mosque. And then they would, in their day of rage, they would kill Americans with cars and knives because these Americans weren't wholly supportive of them turning every building in Washington into a mosque. While they're using those buildings to harbor ammunition to stage terrorist attacks against Americans. On that day, he will present himself, his feet standing upon the Mount of Olives, which relationally faces Jerusalem on the east. Kirk, big world out there. The U.S. thinks it's the cat's meow. That,
center of the world.
Oh,
yeah.
God is with our troops. You know, buy the Bible stick. It tells you so. You know, Jesus loves me, this I know, because my Bible stick told me so. He's not returning to Washington, is he?
No, sir.
Not even the city of angels, Los Angeles?
No.
Not even the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia?
No.
Not even the city of commerce, New York?
No, the banking city, London.
Not to the city named after the Freemason, Washington. No. Not to London with all of its, you know, international cachet. Not to Paris, the city of lights. Not going to go to Moscow and visit with Putin. Not going to Beijing to meet with the Chinese. Not going to Mecca. So when he goes back and he sees a temple and a shrine to a god modeled after Satan, Allah, who spends all of his time in hell by his own admission, who's by his own admission terrorizing people and torturing them, do you think that he's going to take kindly to those shrines on the Temple Mount?
Not according to the next verse.
Do you think he's going to give Muslims unfettered access to them and restrain the Jews from defending themselves from being raped and plundered by said Muslims?
That would be out of character. Just a little bit.
Yeah, does the next verse tell us that the Mount of Olives is going to split in two? Yeah. Down the middle from the east gate to the sea? Exerting a great force, half the mountain will be felt moving southward and half will move to the north, creating a great valley.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen? You know what's going to be swallowed up in that valley?
I do.
Yeah, all traces of religion, right?
Yes, sir.
All traces of militaries. All of the stars of David, even representing political Israel.
Bar Kokhba.
The star of Bar Kokhba, son of a star. The false messiah of rabbinic Judaism. It's all going to split into two. Now, you know, these Christians, they're looking forward to their second coming. Why don't they read Zechariah? Tells exactly what's going to happen. Tells whose side he's going to be on. It tells you how to be one of his kids. Acknowledge that Yahweh is our God.
Quick little question.
Yeah.
Christians canonize all these books, or the church canonizes
all these books. Yeah.
The minor prophets, of course, Zechariah and our good old buddy Chabuk, are those, and they're all canonized. What does that mean to them when you canonize something and then you ignore it?
Why canonize the Torah have a book that says the Torah's pornography, the Torah cannot save, the Torah has been done away with? Why carry it around?
At what point do you walk away from that stuff?
And say, you know, this is really stupid.
Yeah.
I don't want to be irrational, and I have to be irrational to be a Christian, so I don't want to be a Christian anymore because it doesn't serve anyone's interest for me to be irrational. He says, escape to safety through by mountain valley. For indeed, the mountain valley will reach the place where you will be set apart and taken away. Depart in haste, similarly to how you fled from the presence of the earthquake in the days of King Uzziah of Yahudah. Yahweh has dress rehearsals for everything. And you can study the earthquake in King Uzziah's time and understand that what was important to do and how Yahweh prepares us in advance to know what to do. You and I aren't going to be there.
No. I'll miss that.
Yeah.
I'll see it from up above.
Yeah, well, you actually, we won't be doing any of the fleeing, but we will, we'll be witnessing from above because Yahweh even tells us that. He says, you know, it says, Yahweh, my God, will return, and all of those who are set apart. Isn't that exactly what Yahusha said when he was citing Zechariah in the Olivet Discourse? That from the four corners of the heavens, that those who are set apart will return?
Yeah, vital component is set apart.
Vital component. And Yahweh, my God, will return, and all of those who are set apart with him. Wow. We're going to be there. We're going to be there as witnesses to this day, to the obliteration of all that is in opposition to God, religion, politics, militarism. And we'll be back tomorrow.